Hello and welcome to the Slow Home Podcast. This is the podcast all about slow living in a fast-paced world. My name is Brooke McCallery and I am super delighted to have you here.
My name is Ben McCallery and welcome to episode 200 of the Slow Home Podcast.
Wow.
Yeah, we've made it.
We did it.
Yeah, we have.
Not that this was some like end goal or anything, but it just seems like a lot.
Let's talk about the fact that we've reached this milestone and what that has meant to us.
Mm.
Also in the lead up to the 200, what we had planned to do.
Yes.
But we just wanted to take a break from regular podcasting, the schedule, and yeah, update people on what's been happening and the kind of couple of weeks we've had. And what we'd had planned for the 200th episode.
Yes.
And the reality of that.
I want to talk about that a lot, actually. Yeah. There's something really important, I think, to unpack in that and to discuss in it. And that's really what I want to talk about today, which is not at all what I thought this show would look like.
It's bizarre how things are perceived and then the reality of them.
Yeah, which is also something we've learned quite a bit about in the last few weeks.
So welcome to episode 200. Let's get into it. So before we get into today's episode and talk about the big lesson that we've learned over the last couple of weeks, I think we should take the time to thank our wonderful listeners.
Yeah, absolutely.
For helping us get to episode 200.
Well, the reality is if no one was listening, we wouldn't continue to talk to ourselves for 200 episodes. And the community has not only been wonderful and strong and engaged and supportive, yes, and encouraging, but it's also growing. And it's really exciting to me to see that. And I've said this at quite a few of the book talks and launches and things that I've done, but it makes me really happy to see people who, at least on some level, want to engage this idea of slowing down because we're all a bit spent. And I think the more that we talk about it, the more that we listen to ideas about it, the more that we explore what it means to slow down personally and how that can affect things in a much broader way than I ever expected, I think the better, because it gives us options. It says it's okay to slow down. It's okay to be, I guess, different in that regard and to not just blindly accept that we need to live hectically.
Mm.
And it just thrills me to see the number of people who are coming out or reading the book or just having conversations about it. And it's people who had never come across this idea of slow before embracing it. It thrills me. And I think the core of that movement is the people listening to this podcast. It's you. I mean, you guys have been listening, some of you, since the beginning. And I always feel like I have to apologize to those people for the first 10 or 20 episodes. But, you know, and you've been telling your friends about it and your sisters and your mums and your husbands and your brothers. And it's just incredible to know that there's a whole crew of people out there who get it. And I don't have particularly good words to describe it, but it means so much.
Mm.
It seems so surreal to me, but it means so much.
And I think you've been using this word a lot when you've been doing your author talks recently, but you call them your weirdos.
In a very loving way, yes. Because I spent the first couple of years of this slowing down, simplifying kind of change in my life feeling like I was the only one, like I was a weirdo for wanting to do it, particularly in my immediate circle of friends and family. I never heard anyone else talk about the hecticness of life or how they wanted to not to opt out of it. And I thought that there was something wrong with me.
Yeah. Because anything countercultural, you do tend to feel like that.
Yeah,
don't you?
Absolutely.
That you're an outsider, that you're just thinking about things differently from the rest of society.
Yeah. And that can be a bit alienating, you know, and it something else that comes up a lot in my conversations with people is our fear that we will be not ostracized in a cruel way, but we will alienate our friends or lose relationships over making these changes. And I get that. I understand that fear completely. I think when I started to write about it and then eventually talk about it, both just privately and publicly on the podcast, and I started to realize that I was nowhere near the only one, and that while I may still be a weirdo, I have other weirdos who are around me who get it. And I'm like, I'm okay with being a weirdo, that's fine. But it's really affirming, I guess, to know that we are certainly not alone, and there's so many of us.
Hundreds of thousands of us are listening to this podcast.
Yeah, we ticked over 3 million downloads recently, which is just crazy to me. It's just like that was the population of Sydney when I was growing up.
Okay.
Now it's like 5 million. Okay. That's how I try and figure out what that looks like. Mm. Yeah, not, I mean, not individuals. We've got people who listen to everything, but it's just incredible.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's, how good is that? Like, oh. I just feel.
So, just a heartfelt thank you to everyone who has listened to one episode or to all 200, who has spoken about the ideas in the book, who has applied the ideas, because that makes a difference.
Even just one knowledge nugget throughout those 200 episodes.
Yeah, dropping a knowledge nug, it's real important.
Yeah.
to just do something with what you're learning, both here and elsewhere, and it does change things. And if enough of us start to change small things, we really will create a ripple effect that's going to change the world.
Absolutely. So episode 200, we had planned to do something big.
We had.
A spectacular type episode where...
Some kind of epic thing.
Yeah, like where we reveal something really new and interesting and, yeah, and then just have a whole heap going on.
Yeah.
Really? Do you know what I mean? Like that's... I don't know what was in your head, but that was what was in my head.
Well, Yeah, exactly. It was going to be a much more complicated show than we had ever created before.
Because we asked listeners to phone in and leave a voice message for us about one thing that they've learnt from the podcast. Anyway, it was all this elaborate stuff. And thank you very much for those people that did.
Mm-hmm.
We are absolutely going to be using those messages later on in the year or early next year in a interesting way. But we've titled this episode, The Biggest Lesson. So do you want to share with what that lesson is?
Yeah. In a very inarticulate way, I realized last week when we were traveling. So just to give you context, this is pretty much a real-time recording. So we have just gotten back from our book tour road trip situation. And we had assumed that we would have the time and the energy and the headspace to record parts of episode 200 on the road.
Mm.
And that seemed like a great idea. And as the trip progressed, and we'll talk about the trip in a little bit, we started to feel very stressed about these expectations that we'd created around episode 200. And to the point where someone at one of the events said, oh, I've got big, big hopes for 200. I'm like, oh, I'm dying here with the pressure of this. And I realized after she said it, she was being very kind about it, that they were expectations and pressures that we had created for ourselves. And therein lies the biggest lesson I think I have ever learned, that I will ever take away from slow living. It is that so many of the pressures and expectations that we have and the timelines and the deadlines, not all, but so many of them, are self-imposed and self-created. And it was a moment of realization where I thought, you know, just strip it back.
Mm-hmm.
Strip it back to the essentials. And all of these other things that we had promised, that we had built in our heads, that we had assumed, let them go. Just let them go. Like, what's the core of this about? It's about slow living. It's about
helping people.
It's about helping people. And it's about sharing honestly our own stuff ups and our own lessons and our own mistakes. And I understand now that that's a lot of what people learn from. It's the honest uncovering of like the two steps forward, one step back kind of thing that we do. It's like the changing your life dance. And it was really liberating, I guess, to realize actually we don't need to do a big thing in order to validate ourselves or to be successful or showy or interesting, we can just do our thing and people will either like it or they won't.
Mm.
But that's not on us. You know, we're doing, we're literally doing our best and we're doing it with the intention that we began with. And I think that feels good to not lose that. And it would be very easy to lose sight of that and get all concerned about high production value and narrative storytelling and, you know, all of these other things that are very on trend in podcasting at the moment. They're great. It's not what we do, though.
Mm.
So much of it was just recognizing that trends and choices and expectations and pressures are self-created. And I'm not saying it's an easy thing to put into practice, but understanding it, I think, is very helpful.
You wrote a book called Destination Simple.
I did. That is true.
And apart from not really liking the title of that book.
Mm-hmm. Also true.
Throughout the book, you gave all these. It's like an introduction to living simply and slowly. I feel like this lesson, the biggest lesson, is like the end state for that journey. And I know that and by capping it at an end state. But I think once you start thinking about things like this, in this way, in this mindset, I think you've reached the stage where there's a lot more going on and there's a lot more beneficial things happening in your life than there was previously.
Yeah, it honestly feels like an integral thing to understand, like a real pillar.
People call it a light bulb moment or all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But that's essentially what it is. It's like this, it's this mindset shift that then changes everything.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I mean, it doesn't change things automatically, but it allows us to change the way we view things.
Nice, nicely put.
Because, the rest of it's just stories we tell ourselves, right? And we decide what those stories are to a certain or to a very deep extent, and then we decide which ones to believe. I mean, we can also change them.
Mm.
So, while this is a very specific example of that in action, I thought it was really timely and just really fun and funny that it happened about this episode that we had built up in our heads. And to realize that we have the fluidity and the flexibility to not stress ourselves out over getting this thing done in a particular way was wonderful.
Mm.
And I truly think that it's incredibly valuable to have made that shift. Yeah. So, like I said when I began, that was going to be inarticulate, but I think it's a complex idea.
Definitely.
That will take maybe some unpacking. It certainly has taken us some unpacking, but absolutely vital, I think.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's that. This is our 200, right? No fanfare, no voicemails. That,
like, what you better said, way though, to like realize all this on episode 200, though.
Exactly. So which kind of brings us to where we've been for the last couple of weeks and the last couple of months, really, and how that ties in, I think, to a lot of the headwork that we've done even just now, you know, this idea and coming to this idea. But the last couple of weeks have been really interesting, haven't they?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, unbelievable. And so foreign. You know, there's been nothing like this ever before.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not every day you release a book nationally and have this publicity journey.
Yeah.
Let's call it that. So, yeah, what have we been doing?
So we, as you guys know, the book came out in Australia and New Zealand last month, and I've been doing lots of events at libraries and bookstores and doing lots of talks. And then the school holidays aligned with a few invitations to speak a bit further afield.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to hire a camper van and do a bit of a road trip book tour. Mm-hmm. So we drove out to Tamworth and then up to Brisbane and down to Newcastle and did kind of this big loop over 7 days. And that was a lot of driving. It was, before I say anything else though, it was wonderful.
Mm.
It was really wonderful meeting people.
Mm-hmm.
Tamworth still holds the crown for asking the best questions. I loved everywhere I went. People ask great questions, but Tamworth just got me. And it's great. I like that city a lot. And Mike Campbell in Newcastle.
Champion.
Oh, mate, what an interviewer. Seriously. He was so great. And Brizzy wins for the most humid. I think I was very sweaty. but beautiful bookstore in Brisbane. Wasn't wonderful it? People. It was all really, really good. And
the hospitality shown as well was really wonderful.
Everyone was so kind and just tops. Yeah. It really was. So thank you to anyone listening who was at any of the events that I did on the book tour, road trip thing, and also everything I've done up to this point. Most of them have been around Sydney. I'm being asked a lot about plans for Canberra and Melbourne and Adelaide, and at the moment we have nothing on the cards. It's a funny old thing, you know. I have a publicist with the publisher, and she's been doing a brilliant job. And I think part of the whole process of promoting the book is in the initial setup. So, you know, they put out a call for bookstores and libraries who would like to have me talk. And the people who all came back, you know, we tried to work out dates mm-hmm. to fit around it. And either there was only sort of one or two in those regions, and it's a long way to travel. Or there wasn't any bookstores or libraries who came back to us. Not to say that won't change, because I think seeing that I've done a lot of book talks, maybe that will shift. But it hurts me to say that at the moment I don't have anything kind of beyond Sydney now on the promotional horizon. So if you work in a bookstore, if you work in a library and you would like to get in touch with my publicist, just go to the events page on the website, slowyourhome.com/events, and there's an email link there. But I just wanted to mention that because I feel bad about it. I mean, we could travel for a year and not see everywhere that we want.
But the reality is, this sort of book launching, the way that you're going around and going to spots, it's not actually done anymore. No one really does it when you release a book. Talk about that. Like, we are basically trying to do like a slow book launch.
Yeah, and that is actually...
How mad is that?
But that's... It's interesting. I think the industry is changing because, I mean, they don't have any budget to support like a prolonged book tour anymore, which is fine. Most things are online, and I've done lots of radio, which I could just call into, all that kind of stuff. But I think for us, it is really important to meet people as well. And it's wonderful, and it's not taxing in the way that an old school book tour used to be, I think, which was a week or 2 weeks of insanity, and you just wouldn't be at home, you wouldn't see kids, you wouldn't do anything normal, you just have to give away that 2 weeks of your life. But what I think publishers have realized is that that doesn't work for anyone, it doesn't work for the publishers, and it doesn't work for the person who's written the book, because they either have a business, they've got a family, they don't want to be away for 2 weeks, and it's exhausting, you know, it would be exhausting, I imagine, to do it like that. So they've, interesting, at least my publisher has adopted a much sort of longer format book promotional thing, which is slower. She said it's a slow book tour, it's a slow book promo,
mm-hmm.
Which has been good for us. It's played out really, really nicely.
Isn't it?
What we did learn, though, on this book tour road trip were quite a few important lessons about slow travel.
Yeah, let's get to that slow travel, because I think in our heads we had this romantic notion that what we were doing was going to be a form of slow travel.
Correct.
I mean, the core elements for slow travel were there. We were together as a family in this car, in this RV camper van type situation. We had the opportunity to connect and talk and, you know, share stories and do all these wonderful things that we would normally do on a slow travel holiday type situation. But the reality is, it wasn't really a holiday.
No, it wasn't.
We were both working.
Yeah.
You were definitely working. So again, back to the reality versus perceived, what made this not a slow travel experience?
It was probably just time. I mean, we did a lot of driving, so I know a lot of people probably don't have a reference for how much distance that is to cover that, you know, the Tamworth Brisbane Newcastle trip. But we probably averaged 5 or 6 hours driving a day, which, you know, I have no issue with a long drive. The issue was that it was every day.
Every day.
So I think we only needed to add like a day, extra day in between events, somewhere so we could stay in a place for a full 2 nights and like a full almost 48 hours, get to know a place a little bit, wander around, really enjoy the being together and the, you know, the cool camper van that we hired. And we never really got a chance to do that because we had to be on the move every day. We only stayed in places for 1 night, and usually we'd rock up in the afternoon, camp, cook dinner, go to bed, get up and go. And that felt relentless to me. And I think it felt worse because I was trying to, this was a bit of a trial for next year when we do.
It was, yeah, definitely.
When we do the States and Canada for the book. And it was fantastic. I'm so glad we did it because I think it will inform the way we structure that time as well.
Yeah.
And all it needed was a bit of a rejig, I think, scheduling wise, and to, again, give ourselves the freedom to be a bit flexible, which we were lacking. We never had it. We just had to go. Had to get up. We had to be at the next place. We had to.
Yes.
And that, I think, was tiring. So it felt more relentless than it probably was in reality because I was picturing it stretched out over 3 months when we do it in the States and Canada. And that felt very scary to me. I don't think I could do that for 3 months. I could absolutely do the mode of travel. I quite enjoyed the mode of travel, just with either less distance or more time.
It was also a nice practice to, you know, you had this RV and, you know, four berth RV.
Moana.
Yeah, Moana, we called her. It's like the tiniest of tiny houses, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
It makes you realise any space you can use and utilise. It was amazing.
Yes.
What we could, A, fit in this space, but also do in the space.
Yeah. And
yeah, I thought that was incredible.
I loved it. I really did. I was very surprised by how little we needed, by how well fitted out the setup was, and by how comfortable it was to live in such close quarters. Genuinely, I never once found that frustrating. Not once. So I think that's a really good lesson as well, to just recognize how little you need. I mean, we were kind of essentially camping though, so we had a kitchen and everything, but in terms of the clothes you take and stuff, you don't have a particularly high need for a varied wardrobe when you're camping. And I just took my work stuff and used it as I needed. But yeah, it's the same thing that I always come to realize when we go camping, is how little you do need.
Unbelievable.
You just got to be mindful and make use of what you've got rather than have a thing for every potential need. Yeah, it was great. I will say I missed being in it because we camp in tents usually. I missed being in a tent.
Okay.
I loved the convenience of the camper van. We could rock up. We could be ready for dinner or sleeping in 10 minutes quite easily.
Oh, easy. Yeah.
You know, there's very little setup, very little pack down. And having water and a fridge and all that kind of stuff was great. But I miss sleeping with soft walls. I miss sleeping on the ground. I really do miss that
connection with nature. I must admit, yeah, you do. You don't connect as much with nature as
And we also didn't have as much time as I would have liked to have spent outdoors. So it really felt like a very much a captured sort of experience rather than But there's definitely pros to camper vanning. Yeah, like lots of them. Yeah, so the reality and the perception or the romanticized version were different in some ways. And, you know, the reality actually outdid my perception of things in other ways. So I think it's been a really valuable experience. And plus we got to see some beautiful parts of New South Wales. We only just ducked into Queensland to go to Brisbane, but we did the inland road. Usually we drive the coast road, and there's some beautiful cities, regional cities through there. So I already mentioned Tamworth, which I loved. We camped at Armidale, and we went through Tenterfield and Glen Innes, and then out across to the coast, and then we came back via Bellingen. Oh, it was
awesome. amazing places.
Yeah, I'd really like to spend some more time exploring those parts of New South Wales, because I think those regional cities have got so much to offer.
Yeah,
and I feel like they've got slow living, kind of not on lockdown, but all the elements are there.
I reckon.
Yeah, shorter commutes. Oh, heaps of things. But
stronger sense of community.
Yeah.
Well, you know, anyway,
I loved
that
it.
Sort of stuff. Yeah.
I loved it. So if you're looking for a holiday destination, I might recommend the Inland
Destination
Road.
New South Wales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So that's about it. But if there was one key message...
Yes.
You're on the publicity trail, so I'm hammering the key messages. So it's pretty obvious, but did you want to just share what's the biggest lesson we've learned over the last couple of weeks?
It's important to give your camper van a good name.
Yep, Moana.
Mm. Yep, I think that's the key.
Which we rented through the company, Maui.
I got a giggle. I don't know if anyone else did. It's actually... People have asked me a lot about what slow is, and it's kind of a dissatisfying answer to say it is what you want it to be, but it kind of is. It's about what is important to you and putting that into practice, but also making space and time for those things by simplifying as much as we can. Life's complicated. It involves other people. Sometimes those people have their own priorities and desires, and it's about compromising and figuring out what that looks like. But by stripping away expectations and commitments and shoulds and the things that we're doing that aren't actually in alignment with our personal why, our personal priorities, by stripping all those things away, you are putting slow living into practice. It may not and probably won't look like you think it will, but it will feel more fulfilling. It will feel closer to those values. So I think stripping away the excess of anything, stuff, thoughts, stories, expectations, and getting closer to that core is what it's all about. And that's what I think this weird little example of it has been about. Because you then have the flexibility and fluidity to change things and to let go of things that aren't in your control and change things that are in your control. And I think that's a big lesson. There are things we cannot control. Let go of them as much as possible, and there are things that we can control and change them as we need. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
Who is that? Hi, podcast.